Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show host, and so pleased to be joined by Trout Unlimited this morning. And not just Trout Unlimited local, but Trout Unlimited national. I'd like to introduce my two guests. First will be Bill Love Jr. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Julie, and thanks so much for having us.
Yes, and we thank you for your underwriting support here at KRFY. I just want to get that in so that I don't forget.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, and our second guest is Aaron Plew. Aaron, you are program manager for the Spokane Coeur d'Alene area.
That is true. Well, thanks.
Yes, welcome. So nice to have you both here. Well, Bill and Aaron, I hope you'd be able to briefly tell listeners a bit about how you came to be here in the Idaho Panhandle, how you got interested in all things trout and trouty, and how you got involved with Trout Unlimited. Bill, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, before doing that, though, Julie, I would like to recognize the relationship. You just mentioned the Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited is a underwriter for KRFY, but you yourself in hosting this program, and you also serve on the board for the Panhandle chapter, and Don Childress, who has a monthly program here on KRFY, is a longtime Trout Unlimited member and former president. So our relationships go pretty deeply, and we really relish the partnership that we have with KRFY.
Oh, thank you, Bill. I feel the same, and I've enjoyed helping Trout Unlimited and really learned so much over the years. And we're going to learn some more this morning.
Okay, good. My position with the Panhandle chapter is president, and I inherited that position when Don Childress and Lauren Albright invited me to coffee several years ago, and I figured something was up. And when we walked out, then I was elected president at the next board meeting. And so, anyway, it's been a privilege to be involved with the Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited. We have a few over 300 members. Our area, and I like to put it on a watershed basis rather than a political boundary area. We include the Ponderay Basin in Idaho, and the Coeur d'Alene River Basin, and the small portion of the Kootenai River Basin that flows through Idaho. And so we're pretty spread out geographically, and of our 300 members, roughly two-thirds of them reside in Kootenai County. And so that's always a little bit of a challenge for us in some of our programs and projects and things like that, to have to reach all the way, say, from the St. Joe River area up to the Canadian border.
It is a big region, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of potential projects there.
Sure.
Yeah, and Bill, where did your love of fly fishing and conservation come from?
Well, professionally, I'm a forester and kind of migrated in that direction from my Boy Scout days, and enjoyed being in the forest and started fishing at an early age. And when I moved to Idaho about 50 years ago, my first position with the Forest Service was in a remote camp up by the Canadian border, and every afternoon we were on a stream, and every afternoon after dinner I'd walk down with the fly rod, and that's my passion for fly fishing, especially small streams, started at that point.
Yes, and you're still doing that, and we chose age before beauty in introductions, so you are the senior member in the room, and you're still up wiggling your way into tiny, tiny creeks, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, that's my passion, and what I call the step-over creeks, the ones that are so small that you could literally step over them, but the higher up in the drainage you get, the more apt you're to find a native, in our area, native West Slope cutthroat trout. A few of the drainages up in by the Canadian border that flow into the Kootenai River have native Columbia red band trout. And so to me, that's my passion, is just to get as high up in those drainages just to see how far these tiny fish inhabit.
Oh, what a fun way to fish. It's great. Well, Aaron, I said age before beauty, so now it's time for the beauty. Aaron, tell us a bit about yourself, how you came to be here and how you came to have this really interesting job with Trout Unlimited.
Yeah, well, I came to North Idaho about 20 years ago, and for the majority of that time, I've worked on conservation and surface water management and issues, and I did not start with fishing. I started with a love of ecology and just kind of all things that are dependent on our waterways, and And that's continued into this position with Trout Unlimited, which I started about 4 years ago. And it started in the Spokane and Coeur d'Alene Basin, but we've expanded, I would say, to encompass North Idaho in general, to the same region as Bill just spoke about. And also, we're starting to pick up a little bit of work in eastern Washington, still on the Ponderé Basin, because the fish don't know those boundaries in general. And so this year, last year, we expanded and another team member joined. Her name's Kathy Gidley, and she's my partner implementing projects around the basin. And yeah.
Yeah, great. And 4 years in and still enjoying it, I hope.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very interesting job. It just changes. And as I go along and expand my view, working with different partners and in different drainages, the job kind of changes because you see opportunities or places where there's a need maybe for a nonprofit to come in and help work within with all the other partners. And so it continues to change. It never ceases to be interesting, and I get to learn and grow like continuously.
Yes, and I think we're lucky to have a full-time Trout Unlimited member, and now two within our region, because I don't think it was always that way, was it, Bill?
No, that's a good point, Julie, because here up in the Idaho Panhandle, we were somewhat isolated from the Trout Unlimited staff, people who were mainly in southern Idaho. And certainly when we needed some assistance or had a project to consult with or something like that, well, then there was always the help available. But it's certainly been nice over the past 4 years to have Erin right here in our local area, and now Kathy working along with her.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Well, today our topic is Trout Unlimited, but what we're trying to do is learn about how this big national nonprofit works, from the large-scale, expansive missions to local focus, where many projects happen in our area. And so let's just start by having either you, Erin, or Bill tell us a bit about Trout Unlimited's history, mission, kind of the overall organization. Who wants it?
Well, I'll go ahead, Julie. And
all right.
And Trout Unlimited formed in 1959 with a group of avid fly fishers, but who were also conservationists in the state of Michigan in 1959, as I mentioned. And so this year, Trout Unlimited is celebrating its 65th anniversary. And it's always important to point out that the Trout Unlimited isn't just simply a fishing club, although virtually all members are avid fishers, but it's first and foremost a conservation organization with a national mission of conserving, protecting, and restoring America's cold water fisheries. Kind of on a national basis, there are about 450 chapters located in 49 states. And I found this out this morning, my home state of Louisiana actually has one Trout Unlimited chapter, even though there are no cold water fisheries, of course, in Louisiana.
Interesting.
The state of Pennsylvania, on the other end of the scale, has 49 chapters. And there are over 300,000 national members of Trout Unlimited. And as I mentioned, the Idaho Panhandle chapter has a few over 300 members, which represents 0.1% of the national membership. Kind of interesting how chapters get their names. And of course, Idaho Panhandle chapter, that's based on a geographic location. In the state of Idaho, which has 9 Trout Unlimited chapters, one is called the River of No Return chapter. That's obviously based on the Salmon River in the city of Salmon. We have 2 chapters in Idaho that are named after individuals. One is the Ted Trueblood chapter, based in Boise. And of course, Ted Trueblood was a legendary outdoor writer for many years, wrote for Field and Stream and authored many books. And the Sun Valley Ketchum area is the Ernest Hemingway chapter of Trout Unlimited. So it's interesting how the chapters kind of evolved and selected a name for themselves.
Really fun. It almost makes one want to form a new chapter.
Well, that's right.
And your name.
Yeah, and you too, Julie, could pick the name of it then.
That's right. It could be the Julie chapter.
That's right.
Would not be a very exciting one. All right. Well, Bill, that's some great background on sort of the history and the mission of National Trout Unlimited and, of course, local. And Aaron, could you go on and help us understand a little bit how the National is organized? It's out of Arlington, Virginia, near Washington, D.C., but then you all are scattered everywhere.
Yep. Yeah, the national team, I think it has been growing. There's probably about 350 full-time employees through National Trout Unlimited, and there's probably another 100 seasonals who are coming on in the next couple months to help implement field work. And the National Trout Unlimited is kind of focused on restoration and conservation of our cold waterways for fisheries. So from legend tells it that the original beginning of Trout Unlimited, the anglers at that time were catching a lot of stocked fish. And that was a common practice at that time to sustain fisheries that were stressed from different challenges. And so they started thinking like, well, we go to these areas where the fish aren't stocked and the habitat's incredible. And these fish are more fun to fish for, and they're more vital, and they're just stronger, and they put up a bigger fight. And so Trout Unlimited evolved to kind of work on trying to enhance or restore habitat for fish, along with stocking and other efforts to try to keep the populations stable. But so the national team, a lot of what we work on is trying to help our waterways. And I don't really know why it's in Virginia. I assume it's because of the access to Washington, D.C. There is a political side to Trout Unlimited, and there's advocacy work and policy work that goes on. So I think having easy access to Congress and is probably why. There's also a lot of national nonprofits that are based in Arlington, so it might be good coordination with partners that we work alongside. But the rest of us are mostly scattered around the northern United States, where there's trout and salmon. But there are some people, since COVID, there's a lot more remote workers. And so some of our kind of like support staff, like HR or accounting, some of those people are in Texas or in areas that maybe don't have salmon
wouldn't
and
be
trout.
Full yeah. of cold water fisheries. Well, that makes sense, though, for support work. So I'm thinking, I mean, I know research happens because I've read Trout Unlimited research. There must be researchers around. Mm-hmm. Bill, are you wanting to comment, or are you just giving me a thumbs up?
I'm just giving you a thumbs up. I'm agreeing with you right
okay.
now, Julie.
Very good. And, you know, I'm sure there's got to be litigation at times. Trout Unlimited will stand up for things that have to happen, right? You guys have a litigation department.
Yeah, I mean, we have legal staff, but that on the national side, it is predominantly when I'm interfacing with legal counsel, it would be because I'm managing typically federal dollars and we have to make decisions that that we don't know the answers to sometimes. So we need legal counsel to help us navigate that. And also, I know there is some lobbying, but I looked into this and there's not a lot. Trout Unlimited's not super active on that level. I think that probably that's hired in.
Ah, but, okay. But, well, I have a question about a position that maybe you know about, because I got to think these guys are out on the field and maybe you run into them. River Rangers. That sounds like a fun job at Trout Unlimited.
This is you're like hitting all the ones that I don't actually interface with. I did not know that Trout Unlimited that had River Rangers. I've met River Rangers on the river, but they were all Forest Service employees, and so I don't know.
Okay,
I think the majority of us are in the field are working on restoration work, and generally there is some policy and some advocacy and a little bit more. There is some states where you're kind of working with water rights, there can be legal like support in sure. dealing in that kind of specialty.
Okay. And I just remember, Bill, do you remember when we were working toward the Trestle Creek situation, it seemed like we had the opportunity to have national weigh in. Do you remember that?
Right.
And potentially join in the litigation, but they declined. But it seemed as though there was the possibility that we would have that.
Yes, that's right. For local conservation issues, whether it's development issues or whatever it's related to that's controversial that may impact the local fisheries in the area. When we explored that particular option, we were asked to join in a lawsuit with other conservation organizations. And, of course, we wanted to check with the state council, the Idaho State Trout and Limited Council, but then also with the national office. And what we learned there is that if a local chapter is going to participate in litigation, then it's required to be reviewed and approved by the national legal staff, and that's for good reason, and so by and large, Trout Unlimited tries to accomplish its mission and goals, kind of more on a collaborative type effort, and litigation as a absolutely last resort. And is there any way to work with our other conservation partners and to try to settle the issue without a legal conflict?
Makes perfect sense. Well, let's move on to something we're all very interested in, I think, and that is how Trout Unlimited is involved in our area. Aaron, tell us a little bit about your job and the projects and the ones that you're focusing on right now.
All right. So my job is primarily a project manager for restoration projects. And I recently have implemented projects with a small dam removal, some culvert replacements, we've added over 2,000 logs, like whole trees with root wads, into streams, which fish love. I know sometimes our anglers don't love that, but they're very useful for our waterways.
And I'll just interject for a moment. Why is it important to remove small dams and reinstall culverts?
Well, those are primarily a passage issue, so fish can't migrate, right? If they can't get past a blockage, whether it's a dam or a culvert, or it's even a seasonal blockage, like maybe during runoff, it's so fast going through the culvert that the fish can't get up it, or maybe when water gets really low, there's a drop that a fish can't navigate up. Those might be in critical times when that fish needs to move out of warm water into cold water, or it needs to move to spawn, or there's no food where they're at, or whatever it may be. So moving those barriers allows fish to navigate to where they need to be to do. That's what they've done historically.
In the world of cold water fisheries, there's a little mantra that we use, the four C's, clean, coal, connected, and complex. And so for a cold water species like trout or salmon, then they need the habitat needs to meet those four C's. And connected, if there's a fish passage barrier, then that's going to restrict the passage of a fish. And then also the complex aspect of it, adding that woody debris or those logs to the stream increases the complexity of the habitat. Fish and Game and working through the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement a couple summers ago had a project on Trestle Creek, which is an extremely important bull trout stream in the area. And they increased the complexity of the fish habitat by dropping trees into the stream and some other debris to improve the habitat, especially for the juvenile trout. So there are the four C's that we like to hang our hat on.
Yes, and if I'm remembering right, they paved Trestle Creek in favor of less erosion getting into it.
That's right. The paving actually hasn't occurred yet, but I think it's maybe a year or two out. But that was certainly planned, because of the proximity of the Trestle Creek Road, especially the lower portion of it right alongside the stream, and there is always the sedimentation from the road being delivered directly to the stream. So rather than relocating the road, that would be difficult to do, and then it was a chosen to pave the road to decrease the sediment delivery to the stream.
Yeah, so hopefully Trestle Creek will look good for many, many years to come into perpetuity.
Yeah, we certainly hope so, especially for the bull trout and the West Slope cutthroat.
That's
and,
right.
And the kokanee that spawned there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually a common project would be closures of roads or just putting roads to rest where they're not used and not adding sediment. Supposedly, North Idaho is one of the most roaded places in the country from logging efforts. And we're talking logging roads, you know, from historic logging. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work just kind of putting some of those roads to bed so they don't continue to contribute sediment into our streams.
Yeah. Right.
Several years ago, to illustrate that comparison, someone measured, this was done on computer mapping systems, of course, rather than walking or driving roads, but there were more logging roads on the Coeur d'Alene National Forest than mileage of highways in the United States interstate highway system. And, you know, kind of a little forestry factoid here is that for a section of forest land, which is 640 acres, 1 mile square, then if you're going to develop road access that to that section for forest management, you'll average about 6 miles of road. And so, we do have some very high intensive road situations here in North Idaho due to the past logging practices.
That is so interesting. I'm going to go back just for a minute to the culverts and the small dams, just because it's just so kind of interesting because you can be driving and on waterways and looking at culverts and thinking, oh, it's perfectly normal, it's fine. And we just have no idea, sometimes, if it's a problem. And it just takes, I think, a lot of eyes to figure this out, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually this summer, I just want to mention that Trout Unlimited doesn't own land. So for every project that I'm working on is on somebody else's land, whether it's the Forest Service commonly or a private landowner. I'm always working in collaboration with those managers and owners to get this project work done. And one of the projects we have going on this summer is in relationship with Idaho Fish and Game. And that is we're going to do an analysis of kind of fish barriers through the whole St. Joe and St. Mary system so that we can get a better idea. Sometimes you have really good inventory on maybe national forest land or on state lands because people are out and going doing inventories. But what we lack is kind of just general across all land ownership boundaries and understanding of where fish are not able to navigate. And so that's a major goal, I think, for Fish and Game over the next few years is to kind of get a better look at that throughout the state.
Right, and that leads to a question about private land. That must be a delicate dance to work with landowners. They don't have to help you out.
Not at all. No, and it's delicate in the sense that we probably won't actually access every single barrier for that reason. But I think we can, if we see something that's a major issue or it's blocking movement of a fish to somewhere that's pretty critical where they could be getting up to high elevation, cold water, I would probably approach the landowner and see if they were interested in working on a project together. Often we'll come up with the funds ourselves at Trout Unlimited to get that work done. And it can be a good experience for everybody involved. That's our goal. We would never force a project on anybody.
No, of course not. But it would also be the end of their perfect fishing hole if you helped them in that way, wouldn't it?
That might be true. It adds a little spice to the sport, right?
That's right. Bill.
Julie, a couple of years ago, I wrote an outdoor article for a local newspaper, and the article started out, does anyone know where I could get a bumper sticker that reads, caution, this vehicle stops at all creek crossings? And then I went on to explain it was partly the forester in me when I'm driving a forest road that when you come to a stream crossing, you especially culverts, you want to kind of take a look at it and make sure it's not plugged if water's flowing correctly, because culverts are expensive installations and you don't want them to be washing out from the economic side, but then also from the sediment disturbance. disturbance side of it. And at the same time, the forester in me is kind of looking at that that stream crossing. Within the fly fisher in me is kind of looking up and down the stream. Are there any little pools or riffles or something up or down the stream? Kind of ironically, about a week after that that article ran in the local newspaper, a longtime family friend who owns a printing business received in the mail a bumper sticker: "Caution, this vehicle stops at all creek crossings."
Neat. And so now, we get more.
That's right. That's right.
That's very good, Bill. I love it. Well, can we talk about some of the projects that are slated for the Panhandle and the region?
Yeah, in the coming up years, a lot of these projects, you know, they are years to build. Some projects it takes 7 years or even more to get them implemented. So when I'm talking about projects, they're not going to get done next week. But we have a bunch slated for in the St. Mary's system and on the St. Joe, working with the Forest Service primarily, kind of doing the same work, doing a lot of culvert replacements and a lot of road either decommissioning or closure to prevent sediment addition. We're also working on some stream restoration work, and there's another on the Forest Service here over on the other side of Ponderay on the east side. There's another small dam. Potentially, we'll work with them to get that removed. That's primarily, we have some, I always have outreach and education going on. We're always in schools and working with, like the Coeur d'Alene schools and the Sandpoint schools to try and, teach kids about what fish need and about healthy streams and waterways. And then we also, as I mentioned, we're working on some research projects with partners.
What kind of research?
Well, I explained the AOP, well, that's called Aquatic Organism Passage. So it's kind of a research project looking at
the fish passage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
And also some looking at trying to get a better idea of where we have predatory like brook trout above culverts and below culverts. We want to have a better look at where, when you open up passage, are you actually opening up a passage for a fish that is going to compete with a native species? And so that's something that we're taking, Trout and Limit in general, national-wise, is taking a very thoughtful approach to in our culvert replacements or migration barriers, just thinking about how that changes things. Because in some ways, some of these things have been evolving that way or living that way for 50, 60 years, and potentially you could be creating a new problem if you're not really knowing what you're doing.
So I hadn't really thought about that. We have our whole Clark Fork to thank for Northern Pike and Ponderay, and of course it would follow on creeks. The wrong fish can get in there if you open up too much.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And Bill would be sad.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a little contradictory because here we've been stressing the importance of connectivity in a stream and where there is a fish passage barrier, opening it up. But in some situations, as Aaron mentioned, above that barrier, you may have a pure strain of native fish that have been there since the glaciers receded. And then by removing that passage, then some non-native fish that hybridize with those native fish could come in, or brook trout could come in and take over the habitat. And so there's sometimes when we'll look at those fish barriers and say, yes, we want to remove barriers, but this one's actually serving a pretty important cause by protecting an important fishery.
Yeah. It's very true. I forgot about one of the biggest projects that's just an ongoing project for me and that I really want to spread awareness of. And that's, in this job, as I was mentioning before, as I expand, I've been in it for a while, you start to realize, I get a bigger picture of waterways. And in one of those circumstances has been the Priest River. The lower Priest River is in pretty critical condition, hitting very warm temperatures in the summer in the main stem of the lower river. So that would be the dam below the dam at Priest Lake to the Ponderay River, which is a 45-mile stretch of river.
It's so beautiful. What a great river.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely facing struggles on many levels, but temperature is the major one. And so Trout Unlimited, we started a watershed group there to focus on how to improve the Lower Peace River and the whole Peace Basin in general. And that watershed group, we've been going for just over a year now, and it's a group of diverse members with many different perspectives and views, and we're all working in collaboration to try to come up with a restoration plan that will kind of prioritize activities. When you look at a watershed like that, you've got all these different landowners there. It's primarily Department of Lands, so the state of Idaho, and the Forest Service, but then there's also private lands scattered in there and some other lands. And so this approach will help us look at all of those lands and kind of try to figure out where we're going to get the most bang for our buck and our energy on projects, and try to prioritize them so that we can have a strategic approach to kind of trying to mount a very difficult situation. And there are, very interestingly, there's bull trout and there's cutthroat trout that migrate from Lake Ponderay up into the East River, which is off of the Lower Peace River, to spawn. So those fish, they swim downstream from Ponderay, and then they swim up the Peace River and then into the tributary. And it's a really unique migration pattern, and there's still bull trout surviving there. So it feels critical. Like, we're hitting temperatures that have never been seen before, at least in human time here recording it. And so, yeah, we're working to try to save
that. Yes, that'll be a big project. And it's also a great project that'll allow us to segue into what happens with the local chapter, because Priest River is very important to us local folks here at the Panhandle chapter. And Bill, why don't you take over for a bit and tell us what happens in a local chapter? We've heard quite a bit about how national works, and now I'd like to hear what happens with us guys with our fishing boots on the ground.
Yeah, or like I like to say, it's a waders in the creek,
and there
and not necessarily waders in the creek just for a fishing opportunity, but also for a conservation project opportunity as well. The Panhandle chapter has been in existence for over 40 years, for the past 25 years, then we've been very involved with the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement, which was consummated by Avista Utilities as part of their relicensing of the Cabney Gorge and the Knox and Rapids dams. Those dams were installed in the early 1950s, and the original license for 50 years was expiring, and so it was time to renew their federal license to generate electricity. And because those dams had an impact to the fishery and other hydrologic aspects of the Clark Fork Basin and Lake Ponderay, then part of the licensing requirements is for Avista to provide mitigation to some of those losses. And those are specified through the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement, which the Panhandle chapter was one of the signatory parties of this agreement. And so there was a meeting yesterday that one of our board members and former Fish and Game employee Chip Corsi attended, and he was recognized for attending 50 of these meetings over, and the meetings are held biannually, and so, you know, perfect attendance for 25 years.
Wow,
yeah.
That is great.
Yeah. But that shows the continuity of this Clark Fork Settlement Agreement and the relationship the Panhandle chapter is had in implementing that agreement.
And Bill, is it unusual for Trout Unlimited to be a signatory on an agreement like that? It seems like that's a pretty special event.
I wasn't involved with the Panhandle chapter at that time, but some of our members who were involved at that time spoke about just how important that was for a small chapter to be operating at that level. In fact, the National Trout Unlimited office assigned some staff people to assist us in some of the negotiations and that sort of thing. And so yeah, it is a feather in our cap. And so consequently, being part of that Clark Fork Settlement Agreement, then a lot of our projects are oriented to the Lake Ponderay area. And we receive some annual funding from Avista to implement the Bull Trout Education Project, which is also partnering with Idaho Department of Fish and Game. And so we have a part-time contractor that works primarily during the summer months for bull trout education, providing educational opportunities for school groups and the general public. And a couple years ago, in partnership with Department of Fish and Game, a bull trout education trailer, a very high-tech, elaborate, and very attractive trailer, was put together. And between part-time contractor and usually with a conservation officer with Fish and Game, then that tractor, that trailer goes around to different locations during the summer to educate the public about the importance of protecting bull trout habitat and also protecting the population of bull trout and discouraging poaching and unlawful taking of that endangered species.
Yeah, and understanding species. There's so much benefit with that trailer. So both national and local have education components, and is there other education that happens?
Yeah, that's in fact, we had a chapter board meeting last night, and we were talking about some activities we'll have this coming spring and early summer. The one that we've participated with, the Idaho Master Naturalist at the Waterlife Discovery Center on Lakeshore Drive, the old Sandpoint Fish Hatchery, is a interesting program. It involves 20 youth. They have to pre-register, but it's a day of not only fly fishing instruction, but also aquatic insects and basic hydraulic principles and things like that. And so that's a popular program that we do. We're planning to work again with some elementary classes from the Bonner County area at Round Lake State Park, and this is in partnership with the Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District and Fish and Game. And then this year it appears that some students from Sandpoint High School, Aaron Gordon, a teacher at Sandpoint High School, and has a outdoor fishing outfitting service during the summertime, has been working with students on fly fishing, and it appears that some of them will help us in the instruction. So what better way of instructing is for high schoolers to instruct elementary students? And so then last year, for the first time, we partnered with the Kootenai Friends of the Kootenai National Wildlife Refuge up in Bonner's Ferry for a fly fishing open house, and that was very popular, and so we're looking forward to doing that again this year.
Yeah, really nice. And yeah. I think fun for the instructors and fun for the participants. They're really fun events.
Yeah, my favorite activity by far is for the last couple of years, we've partnered with the Kalispell Tribe and in fly fishing instruction with some tribal youth, and it's owned at the Indian Creek Community Forest that's owned by the Kalispell Tribe. There's a fish pond there that's stocked with fish, and so we spend time with about 12 to 18 tribal youth and teaching fly casting and some basic fly fishing instruction, and then they have an opportunity to catch fish in the pond. And I mean, it's just I can't describe, you know, how exciting that is to see the these kids catching the fish, and they're actually, because the pond is there for tribal use, then the tribal families are encouraged to fish in the pond and to actually keep the fish because it's an excellent source of protein for the family diet. And so to give them that opportunity to catch some fish, and then hopefully ask mom and dad, hey, let's go to the pond and catch some fish again today.
Really very nice. Yeah. Nice education opportunities. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about education, a bit about projects. Are there other projects that we should know about for this year?
One that we're just starting to get involved with, this is at through the invitation of the North Idaho Flycasters, which is a fly fishing club based in Coeur d'Alene. They reached out to us because they're looking to install a fishing launch and take out at the Pritchard Creek Day Use area on the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River. Now, this is right in the heart, just where Aaron is doing some restoration work on some private land in that very same drainage. And so we felt that this was an excellent opportunity to partner with the North Idaho Flycasters because it'll... We'll have our sign, the Trout Unlimited sign there, and then as Aaron's projects develop over the years, then there'll be some Trout Unlimited involvement there. And so it's just really in an ideal location. Plus, it would be an outstanding opportunity for not just anglers, but the general public that enjoy floating the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River, provide an access. And so we're looking forward to assisting on that project this year.
Yes, and that was monetary assistance. You're not going to be heading out with your shovels and going to work. You're not putting me on that project. I hope.
We certainly made the offer to them that we'll write a check for sure. But if you need boots on the ground or waiters in the creek, let us know because that's the thing is if we drive up to kind of spend a few hours on a volunteer project, we'll certainly have our fly rods in our pickup as well.
So. There you go.
And we'll do a rod and reel survey. That also contributes to the data that Idaho Fish and Game keeps on the stream. So it's all connected, Julie.
It's a win-win, Bill, it sounds like. Well, these things aren't accomplished without funds. And how does the local chapter work toward that, getting the funds to make the chapter as great as it is?
Well, it's good to be here with you today, Julie, because just a couple weeks ago I was here with your co-host Phil Huff talking about our primary fundraiser of the year with Panhandle Chapter, and that's the Fly Fishing Film Tour, F3T. And when I was here with Phil, then we were encouraging people to attend that event that was held last Friday night. And as it turns out, it was a very successful event. And so now I'm here to report to you about the success of that event. And not only does that draw several hundred people to watch some exciting movies about fly fishing, but it is an important fundraiser for the chapter. And basically, the way we look at it is the money generated from that fly fishing film tour basically covers our chapter operating expenses for the year. And so then that frees up other income that we may receive to allocate towards projects and educational activities and things like that.
Yeah, very good. Because Trout Unlimited does operate on a really pretty small budget here locally, and a lot of good is done with all volunteers and really not too much money.
That's right. That's right. And you know, and now with Aaron in the position that she has, and along with Kathy Gidley, then we just look at further partnerships of whether it's kind of some volunteer labor or if we could help raise some money to help support a project. Then I like to say we're all one TU, and whether we're the volunteer members or the staff members.
That's so true. So that's how the work is done together through national and then volunteers, and it gets done. It does get done. Well, I wanted to ask about another element of Trout Unlimited, and I'm not sure which of you would like to address this, but there's I'd just like to talk about events that bring members together from all over the place. And I know there's an Idaho Council that happens annually, but then also a national rendezvous, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's multiple opportunities beyond the chapter level, and in fact, just this morning before coming to the station, I checked my email, and here was an announcement of the Idaho Council meeting that's going to be held in April in Boise. So we'll be sending a representative or two to that. Talking about some of these national meeting opportunities, last September, in Spokane, Washington, was the national meeting of Trout Unlimited, both, you know, staff members as well as volunteers. And very ironically, I was out of town during that. And here, you know, here was my one chance to drive 70 miles to a national Trout Unlimited meeting. And I was away and not able to attend. But coming up this spring, there's going to be a Trout Unlimited rendezvous in Idaho Falls. And Aaron, I think, could talk about maybe some of the other, you know, these national type events and that sort of thing.
To be honest, the national event that was in Spokane, that I had knee surgery like a week before that. I couldn't walk very well. And so I wasn't really feeling up to it because I was going to have to help, you know?
Right. Yeah, I get it.
So I missed that opportunity. And I I think a lot of those events are actually geared more towards the chapters and the volunteer body than the national staff. Not that we can't attend, but it they're not typically that close. First off, and
you're working. You've got a job, not like the rest of the TU volunteers who are so often retired and goofing off.
Yeah, we just wish that Chris Wood, the national the CEO of Trout Unlimited, would have checked with Aaron and me about what does your schedule look like the end of September of 2023 for a national meeting in Spokane.
There you go.
But we weren't consulted.
No, I feel like I lost my one opportunity, but maybe sometime I'll make it to one of the other ones.
Yeah. Maybe so. Well, Bill, one large aspect of being a TU member is being a volunteer, and I know that you seek out volunteers for projects, and then, of course, we love to have volunteers and members come to the meeting. And is the organization, even with 300 people, looking for more volunteers and members?
Oh, absolutely, and the more the merrier, and as I mentioned, given the wide geographic distribution of our membership, communications is one of our primary challenges, and one thing that we've embarked on just recently is an agreement with Erin, and she's working on a communications plan to improve our outreach to our members, and so you know, we're really looking forward to that effort paying a dividend, and you know, it's you know, hard to expect someone from maybe Benoit County and along the St. Joe, one of our members there, to drive up to Bonner's Ferry to work on a project, but still we just need to have that communications, and whether it's going to be a project or an educational opportunity or just a general meeting of the chapter, we need to get the word out to our membership.
Yeah, communication is key. As is a problem with so many nonprofits around Sandpoint, younger folks are needed. And I think Trout Unlimited is looking for the young fishing guys to join in and become a little more involved, really.
Yes, that's true. Just to give a recent example, I was standing in the lobby of the Panada Theater selling raffle tickets for the fly fishing film tour. There's the old kind of thinking that to be a fly fisher, you have to be a grandfather. And that's partly to show the demographic of an older male as the interest in fly fishing and fishery conservation. But to be selling raffle tickets, and at one time to see a group of like four or five women, I knew a couple of them that are probably in their mid-30s or so, and to be at the fly fishing film tour was really exciting. To see a young family that I know, mom and dad and the two children about 8 and 10 years old, walking in and as a family and enjoying the event. To me, I just kind of thought to myself and pointed out to another grandfather standing next to me, and I said, that's the future of Trout Unlimited, to have that demographic, you know, attending an event like this. And now we just need to, for those that aren't members, we just need to encourage them to become a member of Trout Unlimited.
There you go. Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, to add to that, I think Trout Unlimited, the national, the whole presence of it has kind of been refocusing a little bit to try to bring in people who just care about our waterways and all of the species that are dependent on them, and maybe who aren't anglers or don't fish, and that there still is great things to be done. And you can come out and volunteer and add plants into our riparian areas, or attending a film festival. It's still fun to watch, even if you don't fish. It's beautiful scenery, and so that's kind of like where my focus is, because I don't really fish very much, but I love being out there, and I love just walking streams, and I love looking at bugs on rocks, and just trying to like inspire other people to get involved and see like beyond how big, how broad the impact is when you work for trout or work for salmon. You're working for basically our entire watershed at that point.
Well, that's a great point, and I'm so glad that you made it, because yes, we're, as Bill already said, it's a conservation organization, and it's great however you come to it. That's great. Well, as we come to, well, I need to ask you this, Bill, if you do have a volunteer, a potential volunteer, or a new member, how do they get in touch with you?
I would encourage anyone interested in membership with Trout Unlimited to visit the National Trout Unlimited website, tu.org, or just type into your browser Trout Unlimited, and that'll put you in touch with the national website. On the home page, there's three red buttons. One of them is Donate Now, another is Join Now, and another is Renew Your Membership. And so
pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty simple. Click on that button, and you could either do it over the telephone or online, and is the easiest way to become a member of Trout Unlimited.
All right. Well, have I missed anything? We're coming to an end of the interview, and is there anything either of you would like to add?
Well, Julie, I hope that this is just part one of a series of interviews with us, because I've certainly enjoyed being here with you and Erin today.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was enjoyable. I learned a lot, too. I always do.
And I always do. I want to thank you both for joining us this morning. Listeners, this has been KRFY, the Tuesday Morning Show. I'm Julie Calamine, and as I said earlier, so lucky to be joined by folks from Trout Unlimited, the current president, Bill Love, and Erin Plew, program manager for the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene, and apparently now Panhandle area.
North Idaho in general.
There you go. Well, thank you very much, and I've enjoyed it a lot.